Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Mike Kalameko from Food Talk. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to a special non-denominational holiday edition of Cutting the Curd. As promised on the Heritage Radio Instagram, we will be telling drunk cheese stories today. We tell you cheese stories while we're drunk. It's just as simple as that. I'm joined today by two friends of Cutting the Curd here in the studio. My friend and the owner and chief monger at the Bedford Cheese Shop, Charlotte Kamen. How you doing today, Charlotte?
I'm good, Greg. Thank you very much.
Always nice to see you.
It's
here.
It's great to be back here.
Taking time out of your busy holiday schedule.
You know, here I am.
Finally
I made time just for you.
Appreciate it. And also, we have the entire management structure of the Bedford Cheese Shop in here today. We have Nate McElroy, finally paroled right from the upper Hudson River Valley Women's Correctional Facility. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm good. The ankle bracelet chafes a little bit. I'm doing all right.
And we had one person bail on us, but he's on the phone, Matt Rubiner. How you doing, Matt? Matt got a DUI for crashing his sled into a bunch of teenagers after drinking a bottle of blackberry schnapps in Sunderland. He's calling us from the drunk tank there, but he uses one phone call to call us, so we really appreciate that. How you doing, Matty?
Good. You got 5 minutes.
I got 5 minutes. Don't drop that soap, buddy. We're just going to, you know, knock back some ceremonial libations. We're just telling stories. So because Matt might be pressed for time, I wanted to ask him my first question, and you guys feel free to jump in between.
You know, I'm drinking
swells.
Alone here.
Really? What do you get? Did you get some Pruneau or something like that?
You're not alone, Matt.
Nah, drinking beer. Drinking.
So what's your? We wanted to know what your craziest holiday cheese story was, Matt. If you can remember back that far, you're a veteran of a lot of holidays.
You know, I've been. You sent me a list of sort of primer questions and stuff, and I was. Racking my brain for witty answers to all of these. I can't come up with a crazy holiday story. You know, this is a country. It's very Norman Rockwell and Jingle Bells, and everybody's sweet and well behaved. And my crazy stories tend to take place on the Jewish holidays.
Well, you can tell us. You got a holiday story, you got a Hanukkah story, or some Yom Kippur tales. Tales on the table. You want to tell us? Just spit it out. You know what I mean? No? Are those not made for radio?
Yeah, skip to the... I'm going to pass on this question. Give it to the other guy.
Anybody else want to bail me out here? You know? You guys are monger cheese
Wait,
in the city.
Wait, repeat the question? What's the question?
What's your craziest holiday story, Charlotte?
My craziest, just in general?
Oh, yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It doesn't even have to do about, like, working in the cheese industry?
Hey, whatever you want to do.
I'm going to pass on... No, I'm just kidding. let's think about it. Nate, what are your thoughts about your craziest holiday?
I also got the same questions as Matt and Charlotte. And I wreck my
You guys are the worst guests
now,
ever.
Well, give me a second here.
Wait, we should take a shot real quick.
Yeah. Hold on, yeah. Where's the waitress? But no, I thought about it, and you know, I think in this industry during the holidays, like say right around the middle of October, everything just turns into warp speed. And so there's nothing that's absolutely going to stand out in your mind at any point in time. It is like, it's the prototypical like time travel idea where you just have like lights flashing past you for about like 60, 70 days. Exactly. So there's nothing that actually stands out because you are just in the mire. And then all of a sudden you wake up sometime after New Year and you think about, like, where did the last 2 months of my life go?
Yeah, that's you look down on your hands, there's a lot of, like...
Where did the last 20 years of my life go?
Yeah. Where did the last 20 years of my life go? I got to give a shout-out to Marty Johnson, who was spreading a rumor that he found me passed out underneath one of the meat slices at the Bedford Cheese Shop while I worked there.
I started that rumor.
And I'm here to validate that rumor. And I wish that that was my craziest story. I wrote these questions, and I thought about them, too. And I've been in, like, the blender of the holiday season a bunch. I remember often, like, especially when I worked at Dean & DeLuca and I was strong enough to do it, we would work and they would open the store early and close it late. And so it would open at some ungodly hour, like 5 a.m., and then we would close at, like, 11 p.m. And I have no idea who or why we did that, because we certainly didn't get any customers after 9, and we sure as hell didn't get any customers at 5 a.m. And if we did, we just probably immediately threw them right out of the store. At least I hope we did. But I remember getting out at, like, 11 after working, like, a 17-hour day and going over to the Spring Lounge and just drinking until about 2 or 3 in the morning when they threw us out of there, and coming back, sleeping in the walk-in for a couple of hours. And, you know, and then just getting right back up and, you know, maybe brushing my teeth in the sink in the department and just, you know, just slinging cheese out. So
that was really decent that you brush your teeth.
You had to. You know, you got to taste things.
That was really decent of you.
It really, you know. Well, have any of you ever worked while you've been hungover? I mean, do you remember?
Never. I'm always 100% on it and super sober whenever I pick up a knife on the line.
Have you ever seen two blades at once, or just wondered,
only when I'm holding two knives,
can that whirring slicer blade slice my face right off?
I often have that image in my head, though, while slicing meat on the slicer, where it's like my palm is going to just hit that blade.
I was hungover from 1992 to around 97, and then 2008 till the present.
Why did you take a break? Were you with Betty Ford that entire time?
Well, you know, I met a woman and he settled down a little bit and moved out here, opened my own business, and then took to drink again.
That'll do it.
It's hard to let go of what you feel most comfortable with.
No, but seriously, it's tough around the holidays. You know, you've got a bunch of stuff coming in, and you know, and hopefully it's all going out at the same time. But have any of you guys ever opened up the store on a New Year's Day or after the holidays and just regretted your life? Nate, have you ever done that? Charlotte's the boss, so she must take off and make you work these lovely shifts, right?
Well, you know, that happened. there was a Thanksgiving in recent history where I should not have been in public.
You mean like 2 weeks ago?
No. This Thanksgiving was, well, yeah, possibly this Thanksgiving. But say within the last 5 years, there was the Thanksgiving that I was not well.
What happened to you?
You know, that's really Gray.
Did you hang out with Greg?
Greg was not present, which was actually like...
surprising.
You know, that's very surprising. Yeah. No, it was under my own volition that I decided to completely inebriate myself. But I was still able to go in, open the shop, you know, everything, money was counted, store was set, doors were open, employees come in, they work. I may be in the back sleeping on a tile floor for a couple of hours, and, you know, but then I bounce back. So, and that's a professional.
One time back in Formaggio days, I woke up on this is probably embarrassing, it'll ruin my career, but I woke up on on the floor of an apartment of some woman. I don't remember who. Must have been extremely drunk. Got up. It was sunlight. I was the only one there. Nobody around. Woman long gone in her apartment. Searching around for mail so I could find an address so I could get a cab to get me to where. Couldn't find anything. Got out of the apartment. Looked around, and in the street said, like, Avenue A. And this is, you know, supposed to be Boston, so I'm freaking out that somehow I ended up in New York.
You took the Chinatown bus?
And then I realized I had to be work at Formaggio in, like, 15 minutes. I can barely see, and I think I'm in New York. So I just started roaming the streets, and eventually I saw, you know, the Prudential Center in the distance, and realized I was in just some alphabetized neighborhood in Southie, and took a cab in, and then I worked for about 15 minutes, and our devout Muslim general manager said, "Rubiner, get home."
Wait, I have another follow up question.
Only day of work I ever missed.
What was the name on the envelopes?
I couldn't find any.
You couldn't find any mail?
I would have called the cab, and it would have been fine.
So did you
woman
just
got no mail.
Oh, that's brutal. That's literally brutal. Did you at least, like, did you open the refrigerator, at least, like, take a swig out of the carton of milk or something like that?
Yeah, I must have. Of course I did.
I didn't know they allowed that you actually drank when you worked at Fromaggio Kitchen. That's a strange. I always figured
that's
you
the 92 to 97 part.
The I'm blacked out all the way. All right, I'll let you off the hook.
All right.
So moving away from the holidays, or maybe moving to them because I might there. I was wondering if you could tell us, Charlotte, just your best customer experience you've had over the last couple of years. You guys just opened up a new shop in Irving, so you're getting a whole new sort of breed of holiday customer there. You know,
yeah.
You get the Manhattanites, which are so different from the Brooklynites.
I mean, night and day. Really.
Yeah, like, but they are, right? I mean, you're not
I don't
just
think so, but
you,
yeah,
right?
No, I am.
No, you think they're the same?
They're the same. I mean, it's a small body of water that separates them, and most people move from the city to Brooklyn to get more space, quote unquote, and then
yeah. But you guys have your new shop's in a really exclusive neighborhood,
super
Gramercy.
Exclusive. You can't walk down the street without like a ankle bracelet, Nate.
Sure. Well, he's out on work release. You know, it's some sort of quota you want to fill there.
The best customer experience. I mean, really, the best customer experience is when they come in as equally hungover as you are.
Nice.
And instantly, you guys have that shared experience of like you're telling a dirty joke and they get it, and you guys laugh a little bit, and they're like, "Hey, I have to go to this dinner party. There's going to be 15 of us. Can you just pick out 5 cheeses for me?" And you're like, "You are the best customer I've had all day."
The path of least resistance.
Yeah, exactly. Like, do you need to taste anything? Do you want to talk about a budget?
Hell no.
Yeah, and they're like, "No, I don't need any cheese in my body. I'm going to go get an egg and cheese from the bodega when we're done with this conversation." And those are the people that you're like, "You are my favorite person of the day. Like, I don't have to cater to you. I'm just going to pick shit out." And then the ultimate is like, "I just trust you." You're like, "I did nothing to deserve this trust, and I'm so thankful that you feel that this is like that deep. You're trusting me."
Yeah, that's awesome. Especially if you are hurting, like legitimately, if you're like, and you see them come up and you're like, "Just don't be an asshole. Just please, for the love of God, just help me out here." And then because you don't think, or at least I don't think, maybe I'm more cynical, I don't think they're going to help me out. But when they do, it's like they're 10 times
better. It's a beautiful feeling. Well, and the hungover compared to the stoned, like somebody who comes in that's so fucking blazed out of their mind that they look at you and they're like, "I just want to taste everything that you're going to give me." And you're like, "Do you really? Like, do we really have to go down this road? Like, can't you give me 10 minutes by myself?" And you like, go look at the shelves. They're so pretty. They're so filled with things. You go shop, and I'm going to, like, cut you guys some cheese, and you're going to really enjoy it later. It's like, no, I actually want to taste. And each time you give them a taste, they, like, get all euphoric and orgasmic about it, and you're just like, do you want this? Like, are we good? Like,
I don't know, man.
Do you trust me yet? We might need to do some trust falls in the back.
Well, those are the people who usually come and ask you for the soft, hard cheese.
Yeah, that super cave-aged brie you got.
Yeah, absolutely.
Matt, you know what I'm talking about.
It's the sharpest brie.
It's the sharpest brie, dude.
Do you have that 8-year-old brie? It's so good.
And they never, those, like, if you are hungover in there, you're hurting, you never have time to open the store. There is literally, you could show up fucking 6 hours early to open that thing up, and you're not getting it open. And immediately, every other day when you're sober in there, you will open up the store, you have time to have a coffee, go to the bathroom, read a newspaper.
Well, you open
around
the door and there's like an hour before somebody comes in. It's when you're hungover, there's like a cluster of 10 people waiting outside staring at you through the window, and you're like, I mean, we got 2 minutes. Like, I don't know why you're looking at me. It's 7:58. We got till 8 a.m.
You're knocking on the door, looking at the watch.
Yeah.
Looking at the watch. So that brings me to Mr. Nathan, and I was wondering maybe if you could enlighten us, because, you know, obviously you wait on more customers at the cheese shop than Charlotte does. I mean, I'm sure she works about 45 minutes a week in there. Maybe you could give us an idea of what your worst customer experience that won't get you fired.
Well, there's no particular worst customer. There's the customer.
Are you saying they're all bad?
Well, no, I love my customers.
If you don't like the customers, just get the hell out.
Exactly. But there's the customer that comes in looking for a fight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That, like, will, you know, the one that comes in and sees you alone at the counter
And it's like, does that happen?
Yeah.
They're all gazelle on the Sierra.
Or suddenly, where you maybe had five other employees there,
yeah,
and you turn around and it's like,
and you're all alone, and you're like,
it's like that tumbleweed rolling across it.
And now I'm dealing with this belligerent person who wants to argue about a sandwich. Yeah. You know, which I had nothing to do with the day before.
They always cut the crust off that baguette here for me.
Yeah, and you, and no matter what you, whatever you want to do to like make them happy to get out of there, they are not going to be happy when they get out of there. But my favorite demographic of customer is the arguing couple. Is the couple that comes up there.
God bless them.
Yeah, God bless them. You can see the tension coming in. They're just, they're unhappy to begin with. And then they bring it to the cheese counter and they want to taste things and they cannot agree on anything. And then the tension builds and then one's on their phone texting somebody else and then it's just like, whatever you want. No, whatever. Why are we even talking about this?
Wait in the car.
And I feel
and that's what I want to say, Matt. It's like, one of you wait in the car, one of you make decisions.
Well, the thing is, and the cheese counter just like there is interaction. You know what I mean? You could be pissed off and go into like the Chinese food restaurant, just be like, she'll take a number two, I'll take a number four. I don't want the number four. Fine, fucking take the number six and we're out of here. Right. But the cheese counter, you're not getting it that easy.
No.
Decisions need to be made.
All of a sudden you're a relationship mediator. You have to talk to him, like, look, guys, here's the thing. You're in the shop to buy cheese. Like, this is going to be a shared experience. It's supposed to be enjoyable. Why are we arguing? You know, like, can we all just get along?
Yeah. And you're giving them like you just open up a wheel of like Mastarazzo.
The best shit you have in the car.
Yeah.
And they're not happy. So you obviously aren't going to fucking win anything.
That's brutal. I think that even to expound on that spit, like the older couple, do you know what I mean? Like the people who have already, they've obviously been together for like 25 years and they have just developed just a deep seated hatred for one another. No questions asked.
But it works.
Like they're not going anywhere.
Right.
Do you get any couples that shop in Rubiner's? Is it just lonely single men, you know, looking at lonely single women as well? Or is it just Hicks at Rubiner's? I mean, who comes in there? Do you get any trouble customers?
Yeah, pretty much drifters.
Drifters? Is there such a thing as a cheese drifter?
Looking for a handout. That's our core clientele.
Oh, God.
No, that's not true at all.
Are those like the kids that go to the Stockbridge School so that they can learn how to like grow, you know, semi-legal herbs in there or what? You must have some winners down there. But I mean, I'm from Massachusetts, so I know if every third customer is as bad as I am, you are really screwed. But you know,
we're good. Our clientele here is very much like they were in Cambridge. It's a very traveled, very kind of intellectual clientele, but not like, and you know, wealthy perhaps, but not you know, goofy wealthy, or at least willing to, or at least requiring some sort of substance and not just spending money for cash sake. So it's an easy group overall, usually, except for that time around the holidays where in full of holiday cheer, I kindly offered to
you're the friendliest cheesemonger in the world.
Which didn't work out very well. The police were called. Yeah.
Have you been wearing your Santa hat since Thanksgiving? Because I hope so.
Oh, yeah.
You're more like Bad Santa. I could see a view of starring that old Billy Bob Thornton movie. No, but seriously, I'm sure you get some good people in there. I'm just busting your chops. So, look, we're going to have to take a break here, but we'll be right back with some more holiday stories here in Cutting the Curd. Cheers.
You're listening to I'm Famous by Alan Wilkes.
The Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
It is so exciting to have this new medium.
Hosting After the Jump has been a huge part of me transitioning from being a blogger to somebody who has sort of real important conversations with people in real life.
My show, I kind of describe it as an audio trade magazine.
I learn a ton from the guests every week, whether it's restaurants, bars.
All the hosts at Heritage all come from different perspectives.
Everyone should be listening to this. If you're interested in conservation and practical approach to renewable food sources, you know, not this big industry.
Whether it's history, laws, social policies of food, I think people now take food seriously, and hopefully what's on their plate will become something very special.
And I feel that podcasting has a future, giving people information in a format they can really use on the go.
We need your support to keep these conversations going. To donate, visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Hi, I'm Reggie Watts, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, and welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm here with Nate McElroy and Charlotte Kamen in the studio, and Matt Rubin are on the phone, and we're just knocking back some libations. Matt's drinking some warm Pabst down there.
What do you drink?
Me, I'm not allowed to drink. I'm just normally like this.
All right.
This guy's got a Modelo going. I think it's a second or third, and Charlotte's good. She's got a cocktail, but we're doing all right. We're doing all right. So
you're saying I'm not good?
No, you're beautiful. You're as good as I saw you at 6 a.m. the other day. Hey, we had to chair a conference on cheese in Savannah, Georgia, and we drunk drive the whole way back, and here we are. Actually, I would never advocate anything like that.
White line fever.
So moving on in our little holiday soiree there, I wanted to throw a question out to Nate and just ask him, just because we're having a couple drinks, what's your top alcohol and cheese pairing? And that's a true question.
Oh, well, it depends on the situation. I think, a good beer, a good porter, and a good blue cheese this time of year is always going to be wonderful, you know. So I could go with a little Alesmith Speedway Stout.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, and a nice chunk of Stilton, and I'm happy.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Stilton and beer pairs really well, or cheese and beer are good pairings in general. I'm not a wine. I mean, I do classes of Formaggio Vino at Italy and stuff, but I like beer and cheese best.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
What about you, Rubiner? You got anything for us?
Sure. Let's see. My best... I mean, in general, I can't speak in too general terms. There's so many wonderful things, but it's hard to talk on the phone without actually seeing Charlotte roll her eyes at me when I'm.
She's rolling her eyes at me.
Oh, don't you worry, Matt. Do you want me to pull you up on like iPhone at the same time?
Or? We were gonna Skype you in, but we figured you'd like open your legs, Fatal Attraction style, a couple times, and nobody wants to see that. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't see that.
But to lapse into the pretentious as I do so often, the best alcohol and cheese pairing I ever had. Maybe there were two, but the one I had the pleasure years ago of sitting down with George Sandeman of Sandeman Port.
You do have to know my eyes are already rolling.
I know,
just
I know.
To be clear. Okay, but go on. You don't have
everything's
to
rolling. And it was a blizzardy night in Boston, and nobody showed up for this tasting, which was held at a restaurant in Boston. So we had a bunch of different Stiltons, and he was opening a bunch of his different ports, and they were all delicious together because port and Stilton's delicious together. But then he cracked open a bottle of vintage port, 30 years before it should be drunk, like a bottle of fresh vintage port, too, just intense and raspy and alcoholic to drink. And we cracked open some Montgomery's cheddar to go with, and it was just one of the truest, most sublime pairings. Those eyes rolling, Charlotte?
I can't even feel them anymore.
Her eyes are almost shut.
And the other one was, which was so memorable, which I've never been able to recreate because I couldn't get a hold of the wine anymore, but there's a producer of a wine called Sagrantino in Umbria, and he made a Paolo
Bea. I'm sorry,
Bea,
where was
makes,
that?
He makes a Passito. So this is made with sun-dried grapes, and so when you press them, the juice is just so intensely sweet, and the wine's quite alcoholic. And we tried that with a Castelmagno, you know, this sort of blue, sort of not blue, sort of Lancashire.
Yeah, like the rare cheese of Cuneo.
Yeah, and in my opinion, not like $70 a pound appealing for cheese on any level. But you know, I buy it once every 10 years and immediately remember why I never buy it.
Cause yeah, because it takes you 10 years to sell the whole wheel.
Exactly.
But it's so blue by the end.
You know, it's just absolutely incredible. So anyway,
that's awesome. That's Castelmagno, I actually really like it. I sell a lot of it. I don't know how, because it's like gnarly and weird, and sometimes it like has like the texture of like a welcome
sometimes
mat.
It's blue. It's not blue.
It's not a blue. It is a blue. We don't know. but that's a good pairing, and I like Sagrantino too. What about you, Miss Cayman? You have to stop rolling your eyes. Tell us, what's your favorite alcohol and cheese pairing? You don't drink wine. You only drink booze, right? I've never seen
Oh, no. I drink wine. Oh, I drink anything that has alcohol in it.
Ah, nice.
Or non-alcohol. I'm a big consumer of liquid in general. but I would say the best pairing this time of year is anything that you want to drink with anything that you like to eat. And I get very anti the pigeonholes of like a certain cheese and a certain beer or wine or alcohol. But I think that ultimately, like, because Matt took wine and Nate took beer, I'll go with champagne. I'll go sparkly.
The champagne's good all the time.
Yeah. I mean, blue cheeses and a sparkling, like a Prosecco or Cava or champagne or just a sparkling white, they are paired well together in a way that you wouldn't necessarily think, because it brings out the sweetness in the blue. With that kind of manure-y, funky, peppery, depending on what kind of blue you're eating.
Manure.
Yeah. Who
you just
does not
to
like
manure.
To be face down in manure?
You just wanted to
Matt,
say manure.
Matt, I'm thinking of you right now. I do always want to be able to include the word manure in any conversation I'm having. It's true. True fact about me. But no, that the fact that champagne is so oftenly paired or thought to be paired with like a triple creme or something kind of buttery and indulgent.
Just say oftenly.
That's not a word.
It sure is, because I just used it, and y'all knew what I meant.
Is that like embiggens, like they use in The Simpsons, the embiggens, the man of cromulence?
It's coming up, Milhouse, man.
I like champagne and blue cheese, too. I think the champagne like works as this really neat little paintbrush that like goes sort of breath.
I mean,
like,
it lightens the palate in such a way. I mean, do you really want to go there? The effervescence that it lightens your palate with is really allows you to take on the other complex flavors in the blue.
Totally. I actually... champagne became like my favorite cheese pairing when I moved out to Sag Harbor, and Charlotte came and visited me there once. And you want to talk about drinking and being depressed?
Don't remember any.
Oh no, wait, no, I'm the only one talking about drinking and being depressed. I mean, it was like the winter. What is that? The winter of my discontent. I literally.
It was really fun to see you in that environment.
Holy moly! I was living in an old like whaling house, which was very beautiful, and it cost me about $1 million a month rent. But I think I was the only person on the whole street, and I was, you know, just contemplating walking into the ocean and not coming back. And then my friend Greg Hessel, who is a cheesemonger there with me, he and his girlfriend took me in on Thanksgiving. And it was like a super rainy day and really lousy and gray. And I was kind of bummed out. And then I went to their house, you know, and Greg's girl was the pastry chef for Mike and Tony's, I think out in Sag Harbor. And I walked in and it just smelled like pie and like a roasting turkey, and like they have like the basement apartment in this house, and they had a fire going, and I was like, all right, this is going to be good. And then they had a few bottles of champagne, of which I don't remember the labels of, and we had a bunch of blue cheeses, about four blue cheeses, and that was probably the best pairing. I had Blue Del Rey, Blue Montchenicio, and I think Picon Cabrales, which I haven't had in like years. And that was probably my best. I loved that cheese. And probably like the best cheese pairing. I still remember it to this day.
The only thing I remember about that trip was the indulgent dinner that you made us once, which was
like
pan-seared foie gras with like pine nuts randomly. I don't know how it all got incorporated. I remember burning the first batch of pine nuts and having to make more. And then copious amounts of whiskey.
Yes. Well, that's
which all paired really well together.
We had a Vacheron that we were dipping venison in, I believe that.
I think that happened. It's all a blur, which is goes back to what Nate's saying, that the holiday season from like October 1st to January 5th. Let's just give us all a buffer zone.
Let's say the 20th.
We need a buffer zone of when you come back from this, where there really is, it's just like this Star Wars, like galactical, like the galaxies,
like the light
flying
speed
by you. Exactly.
They could jump to light
speed.
Yeah,
where it's like what I was saying before, you look down in your hands, you're dripping in blood, and you're like, I don't even remember what happened.
I'm surprised that none of you put a whiskey and cheese blood pairing together.
It's time travel, really.
Time travel at the cheese counter. Well, I know at least the two people. I just burped when I tried to move away from the microphone.
That's professionalism.
Oh, let me tell you, I am a star in here.
You really are.
I was surprised that none of you paired whiskey and cheese, although I know you guys teach a class of whiskey and cheese. Matt teaches a class at his cheese shop of how to deal with him in his cheese shop.
I saw that. I really want to go to that.
That's a multi-part class.
I've like put that on every single list of somebody who wants to get me something for Christmas. I'm like, you know what I want? I want to go see Matt Rubiner teach how to do
this. I just
want to
put this fun fact out there that I was trolling the internet.
Some people don't misunderstand that because it's how to deal with Matt Rubiner, but some people think the class is how to deal with Matt Rubiner.
That's a broad.
Like you're like Chuck Woolery or something like that? No, I think this is how to come in and make purchases without being offended or thrown out, right? I mean, that's
how to actually come in and make a purchase with Matt Rubiner.
With Matt Rubiner.
Shut up.
I imagine that term is used quite a bit. So none of you guys, Matt, poured is about right for you. You're a stylish guy. I know, Nate, you love your beer. I know, Charlie, you love your champagne. But whiskey and cheese, no one went there.
Oh, hell yeah, whiskey and cheese.
What do you think, Nate, what do you think the best whiskey cheese is?
Who are you talking to?
Nate. He clearly said Nate.
Come on. Jesus.
We'll go a full hour just to hear you talk more, buddy.
I tell you, what I really like is a nice aged Kool-Aid with whiskey.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like it blends a lot of whiskey styles, whether it's going to be smoky or sweet or just sort of like pickly.
Yeah.
That aged Irish Gouda is
spot on. So Kool-Aid, for people at home that don't know, is a aged out Gouda type cheese that's made in Ireland. And Nate and I were very privileged enough to go visit the Dickey boys who make
those
it.
Those Dickey boys.
Dickey Williams.
Dickey boys.
And his son. And that it's like most aged Goudas will pair really well with a whiskey. And as Nate and I are very fortunate enough to be sitting in the office towards the beginning of a class when the instructor, whoever's going to be teaching class, mostly Kara Baker, who's one of our best
class
longers,
in your own shop.
Yeah, who teaches the whiskey and cheese pairing or traditionally has or teaches most of them or whatever. She'll come in with pairings for us to taste. And most successful, I think, are the aged out Goudas. And then it can really match a lot of different whiskeys, like the more sweet, more smoky. And so like Kool-Aid is a great because it's Irish and whiskey and Scotch.
Those things go together. I feel like the three of you recommended Neil's Yard Dairy. Are they like an unknown sponsor of this show? Are they pay?
Neil's Yard what?
I can neither confirm nor deny it.
What are you speaking of now? Neil's Yard what now?
I just owe him a bunch of cash, so I thought I'd mention it.
Sure. After you teach people in the class of how to deal with you to come and empty their pockets in your cheese shop. We know how it works with you. Well, we're going to finish it up with one last question, and it's an easy question, but it's the reason why we're all here. We love the cheese, and we've done it, all of us, for a long time that are in this room and on the phone in the Sunderland drunk tank, wherever you are, Rubiner, up there.
Hey.
I wanted to know, just a simple question to you, Matt. When's the happiest you've ever been eating cheese? You got a long career.
You know, I think probably the happiest that I can think
like
specifically happy about eating cheese was, this is going to be a real eye roller for Charlotte, so you might want to.
Now we got McElroy and Charlotte on the eye roller.
This was before I was actually a cheesemonger, but it was not the very day, but the day after I had declared my intention to right all the wrongs in my life and devote my my final days to cheesemongering. I was actually in the town of, or the comune, or whatever the hell it is, of Asiago, in like Bentino, and we went into a shop and we bought cheese, and everything was in Asiagos, and Asiago frescos, and Asiago semistagionatos, Asiago stagionato, stravecchio, whatever, and we got all these Asiagas and sat on the River Brenta there. And had this little picnic, and And that is when specifically I made the decision to get in this biz and abandon my nefarious activities up to then.
That's pretty awesome. Eye rolls notwithstanding. Asiago, when we get here, we get some good Asiago in Italy, but I feel like it's probably nothing compared to what.
It wasn't because the Asiago was so damn good. It was just content.
What about you, Miss Charlotte?
I have to say, actually, the two that stand out are both with everybody that's actually been here. Greg, one was just with you, and the second was with both Nate and Matt. The first, and it has to do with dining outside. The first, Greg, when we were in northern France on that random little trip that we took, and we were eating some like super ripe reblochon in the middle of a forest on some marble slab.
Yeah, right outside of that monastery.
Which was beautiful. And it was like one of those moments where you're like, this, what I'm doing is so connected to far much. I mean, so much more than just cheese. And it's so much more just than these people that I'm with. It's like a larger thing.
Yeah.
And then the second one, Matt and Nate, was with both of you guys in southern France. And I'm not a Francophile. Like, it could have happened anywhere. But that we had our little picnics outside of the Gîte that Nate and I were staying at. And Matt was up a little bit of the hill.
That sounds right.
Where we had like these big indulgent like picnic, breakfast, lunch, feasts, where it wasn't just the cheese, it was the charcuterie, it was everything else, but it was more the experience of like, here we are with people that we love and that we care for, eating things that, I mean, we could find a comparison in the States, but this is something special when you work in the industry and it's something that you don't normally find.
Yeah, well, when you're out of your element, you're eating cheese at the shop all day, like little nibbles. It's sustenance. You're angry.
Yeah, it becomes a little not mundane, but because it's still special and still great.
It becomes a
different thing.
You still
appreciate it. But when you can remove yourself from the business aspect of it and you're like surrounded by the people that you care for in those moments, and you're like looking at somebody that you really love and care for, Nate, Matt.
That's where you and I fell in love.
Fell in love. And Nate, I think about it often just as like something that we were able to experience together, that it was in this communal environment and we got to eat and drink together. And it was kind of like, this is why I do what I do.
That's fantastic. You know?
Yeah, that was very transcendental.
What about you, Mikhail, right?
Yeah, that experience in the Loire with Charlotte and Matt and Steve Jones was
Mark,
really like
a Mark from Formaticum.
Mark Goldman of Formaticum Papers. Yeah, nice. that was awesome. Like staying at the Chateau Fontenay was awesome. And I can't pin down one certain point where I've been the happiest. And you know what? The happiest I am eating cheese is when I'm able to like break bread with like family and friends and share something where, like, maybe they haven't experienced it before, and you know you're exposing them to a whole new level of like of sensory evaluation, and they're tasting things for the first time, and you're talking about it, and it really opens their eyes to like a whole new level of life, you know, because that's what it comes down to, man.
Yeah.
You know, like it's we got a short time.
We do.
We got a short time. So,
eat
a lot, drink a lot. That's the point of why I'm here. No, it's really like. You know, the loved ones that you have that you want to like share these things with, and when you're able to like share cheese with them, and it is really like one of the best things.
I have to just add on to that. I know that we're running out of time, but it's amazing to be able to take a step back because we do this, Nate, Greg, Matt, everybody else out there that works in cheese. You do it so much as your trade, as your profession, that when you are able to separate and see from a I don't want to say novice, but like from a person's experience.
A person doesn't work with cheese.
It's not their industry. And there's something that like enlightens you to being like, this is something really special. Like we know it all. Like our feet are in the soil and we're helping farmers and all that stuff. And when I say it all, I mean what we're doing in the larger context.
Totally.
And when you remember just the sensory enchantment.
Enchantment.
Don't make up any more words.
Yeah. I mean, but that's what I do as a writer. I just make up words.
No, I often think the same thing.
Oh, nice.
Love you, Matt.
I actually agree with that. And that's a good way to go, especially in the holidays. It's good when you are down in it and you're waiting on a lot of customers and maybe you're a little hungover or you're just tired. It's just good to know that that what you do, you believe in. And I wanted to add an addendum onto that trip that Charlotte spoke of, that we were eating some cheese outside by a creek in a monastery in Saint-Rémy-à-Bois, and it was amazing and wonderful. And I believe that same night I stumbled into the orphanage that was also in that monastery.
You did.
I opened the door with a skeleton key and found myself in an orphanage. And then this sort of groundskeeper Willie kind of guy came out. And I was like, this doesn't look like my room. There are a lot of children in here.
So
and
the
this-
weird thing about a skeleton key is that it really does let you into any room.
And
even
does.
The room with a bunch of 10-year-old boys, which
and
Greg stumbled into.
As I was hungover the next day eating tiny croissants in the belfry or something like that, the same groundskeeper guy was like pointing at me and Charlotte and laughing at me, and we certainly didn't check out of that monastery because it was too beautiful. But
but it was a great trip.
Wow.
I think Greg got everything he needed or was looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. I sure
Orphan.
Did.
And the ankle bracelet.
Oh, those French ankle bracelets.
And a permanent record.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you guys all, for Charlotte and Nate, for coming in and knocking a few back, and Matt for drinking that orange Kool-Aid fermented under a radiator in the drunk tank in Sunderland, and to everybody
hey,
for listening.
Where's Sunderland anyway?
Exactly. That's a question you should be asking yourself, because you sure the hell drove there last night. Thanks for listening, and have a happy holidays to all. Stay tuned next week for our last episode of the year. Diane Stemple will do a great book review, and till next time on Cutting the Curd. Cheers. Happy holidays.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.